back with Lake Effect on WUWM. Actor Alan Alda visited the Lake Effect studio about a year ago. Since then, he's completed three films and his second book, Things I Overheard While Talking to Myself, coming after his bestseller, Never Have Your Dog Stuffed. Things I Overheard is funny, of course, and thoughtful, sort of a philosophical memoir. Alan Alda was in Milwaukee recently to read from the book at a Schwartz Bookshop event at Al Verno. He told Lake Effect's Bonnie North that in the midst of his busy acting schedule, he wrote this new book because something was gnawing at him.
Well, I wrote most of the book over the past year and a half or so, and it was a very interesting experience because I sort of got obsessed with this question. I thought it was an interesting question. And then when I got really obsessed with it, my friends would look at me funny because I'd ask them the same question. And they'd say, you need to take a rest. Because I kept asking the same people the same things. And they weren't coming up with any answers. And the question was, what do you look to in your life for meaning? What gives you meaning in your life? Or do you ever think about it, I would say to them. Does it ever occurred to you whether or not, the question whether or not your life is meaningful? And the night that it occurred to me, when I couldn't sleep one night, from that night on, I really was stuck with this question. I'm trying to look back over, actually, I was looking back over things I had said to young people, because I'd for years, for decades, I've been talking to young people, my grandchildren, my children.
Giving all these commencement speeches.
And giving commencement talks. Well, I really take it seriously that these kids are listening for something. But, when you give advice to young people, you're really talking to yourself, partly because they're not listening and partly because you're trying out these ideas on yourself, I think. And you really – and any advice is probably like that. And I started to listen in again on these things I'd been saying to myself and trying to figure out what it's all, because this is a life now since my last time we talked, I got this whole part of my life handed to me for free. Yeah, I was on the way out 4 years ago, and I had an emergency operation, and I came back, and now it's very important to me to figure out how I can get the most juice out of this life I have left.
One of the things I love in the book is the way you look to all kinds of different disciplines for that meaning, trying to find what that is. And you are always putting art and science together. They're not antagonistic in your mind.
That's true. And it's interesting. When I was a kid in high school, although I had been interested in science as a younger boy, I was very curious, and I was always trying to figure things out. I remember asking a teacher, what's a flame? What happens in a flame? And she said, oh, that's oxidation. And I thought that was the dumbest thing I ever heard. She just gave me another name for it. I didn't want a word. I wanted to know what was going on. And it turns out to be, it's a complicated question. But if I could have had somebody, leading me through that and trying to get a little closer to an answer, I probably would have been curious about science earlier on and learning the languages of science, like chemistry and math. But in high school, that was the time when, for instance, C.P. Snow was just giving his talk at Cambridge about the two cultures of art and science. And he was talking about how they had grown apart. And they really had. He was talking about me, and I didn't know it. I didn't even know about him at the time. In high school, because I was interested in writing and acting, I got myself out of the math class, and I knew that I wasn't that interested in the science. I knew you weren't supposed to be. And then in my 20s, I got really curious, but I didn't have the languages at my disposal. So I have to get all the science through words. I have to get it just through concepts. But I love to mix them when I think that there are insights that you can get from both science and art that play out on one another.
Well, how do you think they merge for you?
You know, the scientists that I've met, and some of them have become good friends, because I interviewed 600 or 700 scientists on Scientific American Frontiers on PBS. Although there's a material difference between art and science in that science has to come up with a testable version of reality, and art Doesn't have to. All art has to do is refresh your soul, which is
just a small thing.
but in the process of doing what they do, they both have to be rigorous. Artists are just as rigorous as scientists. It's not true that just any color will do or any word will do. I mean, we rack our brains to think of the right combination of words to try to say something that can't be said in words. That's what we're trying to do when we write. That's what I try to do. And we have to do research. We have to know what we're talking about. And we have to use logic. A joke is a logical thing gone sideways. And that's why you have to – that's why it's only a certain – when a kid reaches a certain level of intelligence, they can start to get jokes because they know the way things are supposed to be.
And then when you have the context.
And
then when
you give it a twist, then it makes them laugh. But there are so many parallels between art and science. And I hate to see a rift between them. I hate to see people who would love science stay away from it because it seems beyond them. It just needs to be gotten into. We need to get our fingers in a little.
Oh, I agree. I was like you. I was in the theater and music thing in high school, and I just ran away from math as hard as I could. Mm. I regret that now. I regret that I don't know those languages and that it takes me a circuitous way to get into the science and trying to understand, because they're searching for meaning too.
That's
what they're doing.
Oddly enough, even when C.P. Snow talked about this 50 years ago, the scientists knew more about art than the artists knew about science. And I have a good friend who's Brian Greene, who writes these great books about the most complicated science.
The Elegant Universe,
It's about string theory, which is I can only understand it. I can only begin to understand it if it's presented to me in words. He can understand it as a math question. But he says to me that you can understand it well enough through words. And he says when he does the math, he has to go back to words to fully understand it. The thing is, he's got both. He's got two barrels to work with there on his on a shotgun, and I've only got one. And as we often have the same conversation, I say, no, I'm sorry. I think you understand it in a way I'll never understand it.
Well, there was another person that you've actually played on stage, and that was Richard Feynman.
Oh, he was great at it.
And I've read his books, Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman, and those. And what was that like, trying to portray someone like him on stage?
You know, it was very difficult. I was the one who got that play started. I brought a book about Feynman to a theater in California, and I said, do you think we could do a play about this? This is a great character, and he has a great story. And we asked a wonderful writer called Peter Parnell to write the script. We all were ready to be on the stage with the play about a year and a half later. It took us 6 years to get a play about Feynman that would work. And Parnell was indefatigable. He wrote play after play. I don't mean drafts after draft. I mean he would write a draft. We'd talk about it. He'd say, no, I see. And he would go back and do a completely different play with different characters, a different part of Feynman's life. He had so many parts to him, we didn't know how to cram them all together into one play. But when we finally did it, it was to a great extent in his own words, because he gave a lot of brilliant talks.
And he was connected to the arts as well.
Yes.
He was a brilliant physicist.
But he also was an artist. His drawings are very good. And he played the bongos, which was his way of skirt chasing, which he also did, which I suppose is an art too.
I defer to you on that.
I don't know. I'm just an observer, and I played one on TV, but that's about it. So he was an amazing guy, and here's what his contribution was: he didn't leave behind a formula like E equals mc squared. He took the concepts of quantum mechanics, of all these particles that only live for, a fraction of a second, a tiny, tiny fraction of a second, and they're all interacting with one another. And he made drawings that illustrated these interactions. And it was the drawings, neither using math nor words, but using drawings that physicists now use so they can understand still, all these years later, they can understand the interactions of these particles better.
So what did he teach you on your search for a meaningful life or what defines a meaningful life.
You know, he really did teach me something important. I never met him. He died about 20 years ago, and I had not met him. But combing over his books and playing him on the stage, when I look back on that, that really is, of all the things, all the ways I've been through that have given some meaning to my life, and I've been through almost all the things we think gives meaning, you know, like service to other people, art, love of family, being a politically active, all these things. And the thing that means the most to me is, I think, what I learned from Feynman, which was his intense curiosity in what was happening, even in the most trivial things around him. He would explore everything. And he wanted to keep exploring what was happening to him and what he saw around him right up until the last moment. And he told his doctor when he was dying of cancer, when I'm on the way out, I don't want you to give me an anesthetic, because if I'm going to die, I want to be there when I do. To me, that's heroic, and I hope I have that all the way through. I think having that for me, because this book that I wrote is about the meaning of life for me. I'm not trying to find out anybody else's meaning. That you're on your own. I'm sorry.
But, okay, fine.
But if it's entertaining to see this obsession I had with looking for it, then you can find it in the book. But the thing that I have found is, I think, what Feynman had, which was hope for an endless curiosity, because I think that will keep me alive as long as I'm even able to think a little bit.
It'll be there, yeah.
Hope so.
The other thing that you talk about a lot in here that struck me was the necessity for surrender and the difference between that and giving in.
Yeah. And, well, surrender to someone you love.
Okay.
I wouldn't surrender to someone I don't like.
Yeah. Okay.
Or who's holding a gun on me if I could have possibly avoided
it. Right.
It just occurred to me once that's probably at the heart of what loving somebody is to surrender to them. And if they surrender to you, then they love you back. If you surrender to somebody who won't surrender to you, it's not a two-way street, and there's something wrong there, I think.
That's a masochistic.
Yeah, I wouldn't hang around in a relationship like that. But when I love my children, my wife, my grandchildren, and it's a little bit like this thing of unconditional love, but to me it's a little different. But I don't surrender to them on the condition that they give me anything back. But whatever they need, I'm ready there to give it to them. And sometimes I don't think they need it, but they think they need it. But so I surrender, dear. You know, the song, I told a friend this once. He said, "You mean give in?" I said, no, the song doesn't say, "I give in, dear." It says, "I surrender, dear." And that there's something nice about that to me.
Why do you think that's so hard to do for us?
I don't know. I guess we're afraid somebody's going to take over our lives. You know, somebody will make us do something we don't want to do, like listen. Something really horrible
really
like
here.
That.
Really here. Look in the mirror. Yeah.
And I lately I noticed that I'm paying more attention to what's happening to me right now, which I said is what Feynman gets you to do, or what he got me to do. I noticed that I'm listening better. There'd be this moment driving in a car with my wife, and she'd say something like, you know, I think we have to cut that tree down in front of the house. And then there'd be this pause, beep, beep, beep. And my aunt would be like, you know. And that's not exactly listening, you know. That's like talking to a memory of what she said. You know, it's not talking to her. So I notice I'm better at that now. And I always was good at listening because I was trained to listen as an actor. That's one of the essential ingredients of acting.
Two people on stage listening to each other is how somebody defined it for me once.
Yeah, very good. And I got an idea about listening a few years ago that I really found has been helpful to me, both on the stage and when I'm in real life, you know, if this is real life. So what I found out was that I listened better if I listened with the thought that this person can change me for the better. No matter who they are, what they say, and even if they're saying utter nonsense, there must be something in there, somebody inside their head who can say something to me that will in a way be my salvation, and I listen for it. and I really pay attention to them. So being willing to let the other person change you is exactly what you have to do on the stage, because I don't say my line because it's written in the script that I say my line at this point. I say it because you make me say it. You draw it out of me. You say something that makes me say the next thing to you. And that's listening that allows you to change me in some way, because my maybe was going to say something else. So when I'm on the stage, what I hope is that I know the play well enough that I'm not wondering what my next line is while you're talking, but that on the contrary, I just listen to you and you make me say the next line. There's a parallel experience in real life, I think.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. Well, did you find what life is meant for you in writing the book, or are you still looking?
All I can make out of it is that sitting here talking to you is the meaning of my life right now.
This minute.
Right now, yeah.
Well, I'm pleased that I was able to affect you positively in any way. I find that very flattering.
Well, I've had a good time talking with you.
Absolutely. Alan Alda, always a pleasure. And the next book, please come back.
Oh, thank you. What a nice treat. Thank you very much.
Celebrated actor Alan Alda. He was in Milwaukee last month to read from his new book, Things I Overheard While Talking to Myself. He spoke with Bonnie North. A Wisconsin author, Larry Watson, with a new novel coming up next on Lake Effect from WUWM.
Without you, I just can't find my way. I surrender, dear.